Hey, podcast people, how's it going? This is Azrin, the language nerd here. I am the owner of the Calgary Language Nerds, and welcome to this podcast episode. I have a few things that I would like to share, and I'm pretty excited to share all of them. The first one is related to language learning. When people learn languages, children, adults, teenagers, it doesn't quite matter what the age is. When people learn languages, there are a couple of different phases that people tend to go through. Now, I will be honest, I'm not an expert in these phases. I haven't read all of the research. I haven't studied it in depth. What I'm sharing is based on a little bit of surface level knowledge that I have based on some surface level research that I have done. For example, when I was in university, I took a couple of linguistics classes where this is something that we studied. And more importantly, I'm basing this off of a lot of my own personal experiences. But I'll be honest, I do actually want to go read some of the research of this in more depth because I think it'll make me a better teacher. But here's what I would like to share today based on the surface level research that I have read and the depth of personal experience that I have. And I do believe what I'm about to say makes a lot of sense. So when we are learning a language, whether it's as a child or as an adult or as a teenager, it doesn't matter. When we're learning a language, we are going to pass through certain phases. Initially, one of the phases we're going to go through would be akin to a babbling phase of a baby. So if you're familiar with the babbling phase, this is where babies make sounds with their mouth. They make sounds, and they're not forming any intelligible or understandable words. They're simply forming sounds. They're going ba ba boo ba doo, and they're just making noises. Adults don't go through this phase in the same way, but they do go through their own form of babbling phase when they are an absolute beginner. And this is where you're learning the language and your ears and your mouth are getting used to the sounds of the language. And even pronouncing a single word is pretty challenging. And it pushes you. It challenges you. I don't think there's another way to put it. This is the adult's version of a babbling phase where you're getting used to, your mouth is getting used to the sounds of the language. And while you're able to pronounce words to an extent and maybe say some short phrases, it's hard. It's really, really difficult at times, especially when the language you are trying to learn has an alphabet or a phonetic system that is different than what you are used to in your mother tongue or any other languages that you speak. So what you have to do is you have to train your tongue and train your ears to get used to the sounds of the language, even if it's just getting used to the sounds of the language to a certain extent. One thing that babies do is they, generally speaking, get used to the sounds of their mother tongue to a certain level of perfection so that they don't have an accent. They don't have a foreign accent, like a Chinese accent in English or a Spanish accent in English, etc. They sound natural and they sound like a native speaker when they're older. And as adult learners, we don't necessarily always achieve that end result. But we do, anyone who's learned a language to a high degree fluency, or even an average, even a middle degree fluency, has at least a basic grasp of the sounds of the language, enough to be able to communicate at a minimum. So we go through this in our own way. Now, what comes next is we go through a one-word phase. So if you think about young children, this happens to babies as well. They start with saying single words. Mama, dada, teddy, if they have a teddy bear, or this, that, they go through this one word phase, and adults do the same thing. Where adults are different is that they're able to intellectually use their superior brain power in comparison to a baby, and even when you're a beginner, you can form sentences, even when you're a pure beginner. However, where we are not different, in my personal experience, compared to babies or young children, is that the moment you are in a position where you actually have to communicate in the target language, if you are a beginner, even though you technically have the ability to form sentences, and communicate in an intelligent manner, we will often revert to that one word phase if you never got past the one word phase. Does that make sense? And so I believe it's important for us when we're learning a language early on, when we're beginners, you have to go through the one word phase. Even though you want to form sentences, you want to learn the grammar, you want to do things that are more complex, it is important for you to start with one word, the one word phase. You have to learn chair, table, mom, dad, whatever words, single words, until your brain gets used to remembering single words. I think a lot of language learners skip this phase. They skip it. Let me give you an example. I was thinking about this over the past week. When I learn a language, personally, even when I'm a beginner, even when I'm a beginner or reasonably early in the language, how do I say this? Even when I'm reasonably new to the language, when I, this is hard to say. Let me try and think what I'm trying to say here. When I'm trying to learn a language, even at the beginner phases, not super beginner, but let's say mid beginner, upper beginner, the language feels reasonably natural to me. Natural? Man, I don't know. There's something I'm trying to say, and it's really hard to express it exactly into words. But yeah, that's really hard to explain into words. I'm going to have to think about that one. If I had to put it into some kind of words today, is that, and this isn't exactly right, but it's as close to right as I can say today. The language feels, to some extent, natural to me, even though I'm not necessarily very fluent in the language. When I hear a word, I can hear the sounds clearly. I'm able to remember it to an extent. But a lot of language learners don't, even when they're reasonably intermediate, let's say. They still struggle to remember new words. They struggle to get words out of their mouth. They struggle to understand. People have to speak slowly. Even when they've learned, even though they know how to say something that's so simple, they struggle to understand it and express it. And I think it's because they skipped certain fundamental phases of learning the language. They did not properly complete the one word phase, or what comes next, which would be a two word phase, right? We have one word phases first, then we go to two word phases, where we say, for example, no good. Oh, no good. Instead of saying, that's not good and I don't like it, we just say no good. And we skip a lot of the key words we need in the sentence. But this is a phase of language learning. We then go to a three-word phase. We then expand to a four-word. Then we get to these short sentences. Then after a while, once we're good with single sentences, simple sentences, we then start to make sentences that have multiple clauses. Now, I think I got a knowledge gap here, because I know that the process goes some form of babbling, just getting used to the sounds, then one word, then two word. Then after that, you know, three word, four word. I think I'm lacking some knowledge on exactly what the phases would be. I have an intuitive knowledge of what the phases look like, but I don't know exactly how to put it in clear scientific terms. Sometimes I find that human beings, myself, everybody, we understand something deep in our mind, but we don't quite know how to put it clearly into words because of one reason or another. And I feel like I've got a slight knowledge gap there, and I have to fill that knowledge gap so I can express it clearly. But the simplified version of it is we start with just sounds. Then we start by saying one word. Then we can do two words, then three, then four, then five, then short sentences, then longer sentences, then more complex sentences that use things like, well, what do we call those? Connectors, like although and however, and we get more complex, then we can do more complex ideas, and we get more and more complex over time. But you have to build your way up to that. And if you skip your two-word phase, and all of a sudden you're trying to do much more complex sentences, and you never really went through that two-word phase, which a lot of language learners don't, I should add. I can think of students I teach that have an intermediate level, in terms of their grammar knowledge, in terms of their, even in terms of the speaking ability, like they can get those sentences, they can get reasonably complex sentences out of their mouth. And they can actually converse with you about reasonably complex topics. But it's such a painfully slow process for them. And my theory as to why that's happened, I've been thinking about this a lot, because I've been trying to think, what the heck, why do they even struggle to say something simple like je suis in French? I have students that they can say je suis, and they can even say something really long, like a long sentence using the term je suis, which translates in English to I am. But it takes them a long time. They can't just say je suis easily. They go je suis, and then they keep saying the sentence, and it's slow. And I'm like, why is it so slow? And my theory as of right now is that they never actually went through the phases of learning and actually internalizing at a deep level one word or two word phrases. Like even just saying je suis and getting that at such a point where je suis is as natural, is feels as natural to them as the words I am in English. They never did that. They never did it. And as I was thinking about it, you guys know I've talked about this a lot. I have my free course on how to learn a language that I put together on my website. One of the things that I've tried to do in this course, especially in level one, and I never really fully realized it until now, it was something unconsciously that I knew, and now I'm realizing it consciously, that I've made especially level one in such a way where it starts off with just sounds, then it's like a couple of words with some phrases, right? Then it goes to these short three-word sentences. And ultimately, it's not even really three-word sentences. It's just literally going, what is this? This is a table. And like very short sentences. And sometimes even just one word with one-word answers. Then I progress into actually describing the objects you learned how to say. A brown chair versus just a chair. So adding a little bit more detail. So even I was looking at it, I was like, oh yeah, I think I realized that at some intuitive level when I was making the course. I just didn't fully realize it in such a way where I could have put it into clear terms and words as I am right now. Or hopefully clear words. That's my hope anyway. So that's important. Make sure you go through those phases. You have to make sure when you're learning a language that that you have to make sure I'm going to try my best to say this, but I'm not saying it adequately well enough. I'm just going to do my best. And over time, I'm going to have to perfect this and communicate this even more clearly. The best way I can put it as of right now, as I'm recording this podcast, is you have to learn language in such a way where here's a good way to put it, actually. Think about you in spontaneous situations where you have to speak. Think about what happens to you. How many words come out of your mouth? Think about that. The statements you make, how many words are in those statements? Do you freeze up completely and you literally cannot get anything out of your mouth? Well, it looks like you got to work on the one word phase. Can you even just start walking around and pointing at things and calling the objects what they're called? That's probably where you have to start. When people talk to you, do you just start spitting out 2-3 words at a time? Like, oh yeah, no good, not hungry, yes, later. Do you speak like that? Where you say, no good, not hungry, later, eat later. And you're talking in these two-word phrases. Okay, well, you're at a two-word phase. You've got to work on moving to a three-word phase. Okay, are you in a phase where when someone talks to you, you reply in one sentence? And you actually give a full sentence, but it's just one sentence? Well, you got to work on going, maybe two sentences. You have to go one step forward. And I think people don't view their language learning like that, where they have to go one step past where they are. Think about that's the way to view it. That's a really good way to view that. Maybe you think to yourself, okay, people ask me things and I can give a 6-sentence reply, but boy, it's painful. Well, how many sentences of a reply could you give at a natural speed? Like naturally, how many could you do? Two sentences? One sentence? How many could you do naturally and sound natural? One? Two? Figure out that number. And then don't give a six-sentence reply. Give a one, like give a three-sentence reply, but do it well. You know, it's funny. I just answered my own question. I'm so proud. I'm so happy. I'm so glad I made this podcast. I've got students I've been thinking about for a while, and I've been struggling to figure out how to help them speak more naturally because they just, they progress so slowly in terms of sounding natural when they speak. And I just realized what I have to do with them. That's exactly what I have to do with them. I've got three right off the top of my head. And for, I'll be honest, in a way, I've actually been thinking about this for almost a year. Some of them even 2 years, for one in particular. 2 years, I can think of one student. And I'm like, and they do progress in terms of their ability to speak more naturally at a natural speed. But, and it's been such a, it's just been a slow progress. And I've thought to myself, is this just what happens? People just progress slowly? Is that just normal? That's just how life is? Maybe that's what I was resigned to that fact in a way. But now that I made this podcast, I'm realizing actually, no, I need to see when I ask them something that they have the knowledge to answer, not like what's the meaning of life, where even in English, you'd fumble over your words. But if I ask you, hey, what'd you do today? They have the ability to answer that, right? Like how many words come out of their mouth at a natural speed? How many can they do? And I need to work on going one more than that. If they can do two sentences, I got to go to three. If they can do like a two words, well, I got to go to three words. If they can do one sentence, I got to go to two sentences naturally and work my way like that. Don't try and make them say eight sentences. That's just too hard. That's so much. That's so far beyond where they are. So that's the moral here. When you're learning a language, go one step ahead of what you're currently able to do. Push yourself to go one step forward. I think people try and push themselves to go four steps forward, and that's not productive. You got to go one step beyond where you are now. Haha, it took us 17 minutes to get there, but that's the punchline here. I think I've got that right. Now, the other thing I wanted to share today, one thing I didn't say actually, is it's two at night. It's 2 a.m. right now, which means this is technically an episode of Midnight Talks. And you guys know what that means. Midnight Talks, I like to go on deeper topics. I wanted to start with something language learning today because I feel like I haven't talked a lot about language learning lately, and I wanted to spend a good amount of time on something language learning. But, this is Midnight Talks, and so I have something really cool I want to talk about. And it's a book that I read, or I haven't finished reading. I'm almost done reading it. I highly recommend it. It is one of the most gripping stories I have read in, I couldn't tell you how long, at least a year, I would say, at least 1 year, maybe more. Let me give you some backstory on the book before I tell you what book it is. I watched a two-hour and 11-minute interview with the author. The author's name, I don't know how to pronounce it, she's Korean, is, it's spelled Y-E-O-N-M-I, I believe, is the first name. And the last name is Park. As I said, she is Korean. And I watched a 2-hour, 11-minute interview with her. And the interview was gripping and captivating. There's no other word for it. Gripping and captivating. One of the most gripping and captivating things I have seen in a long time. I couldn't tear my eyes away from my phone screen. I couldn't do it. I felt her story, her life story is so interesting that it sounds like fiction. Her life is so interesting, it sounds like you're listening to a movie or a book, like a fiction book. Imagine reading something like Harry Potter, where it's obviously fiction, but then you realize at the end that everything you read was real. You're like, what? Huh? Now, her life doesn't have magic and wizards and witches and such, and people that talk snake language. That's not what her life is about. But her story is so incredible that you think it's fiction, and then you realize it's not, and it blows your mind. So what is this person's story? What happened to her? What's so interesting about her? Well, she's used to live in North Korea, and she shares her story of escaping North Korea, and her story of doing that. What was life like in North Korea when she escaped? What did that look like? How did she do it? Her family. And it'll take your breath away. The story will take your breath away. And it is one of the most terrible and yet motivating stories that you will ever read. It's terrible because when you hear about the things that happened that has had that she has had to live through. She's born in 1993. She's actually her birthday's pretty close to mine, actually. We're born in the same month. She's just slightly younger than me, ever so slightly. She's born in 93, so she's only, what does that make her? 27, is that right? I think I got that right. 27, 28, maybe? She's really young. And she has been through so much at a young age. I'll give you a couple of highlights. Well, highlights, lowlights, I suppose, but I will give you a couple of the things that stand out the most to me. She was sold into human trafficking at the age of 13 and was a sex slave at the age of 13. She has known extreme hunger, and extreme hunger as in hunger that probably nobody listening to the podcast could ever understand, even myself included. She walked through a desert in minus 40 weather for, if I remember correctly, an entire day. She went from being a completely uneducated person to completing her GED in 1 year, then going on to I believe it was one of the top universities in Seoul, South Korea, and then actually going to Columbia University, which is a very good school in America. So it just, I gotta tell you, it's one of the most, I cannot stress what an interesting story it is. What I'd recommend you do is if you just search her name on YouTube, what podcast was she on? She was on, I remember now, she was on Jordan Peterson's podcast. So if you search her name, Yeonmi Park, and then you put a space and you say Jordan Peterson, and you listen to that podcast episode where he's interviewing her, it's just wow. And even now, it takes my breath away. I can't find the words to describe it. Can't quite find the right words. And in the book, I've been reading her book, and that's I've binge read it over the past 24 hours, basically. I read it till 3 in the morning last night, went to sleep, woke up the next day, picked up the book, and kept reading in the morning. I'm gonna finish it right now after the podcast. It should take me another half hour to finish. I'm almost done. I'm in the last like 30 or 40 pages, so it won't take me very long. Highly recommend it. I think for me, what there's a few th there's a there are a few big things that are standing out to me as I'm thinking about this book, and I'm gonna think a lot. And I should preface this: these are some initial thoughts I have. I need to refine these thoughts, to be honest. These are just some initial observations, and I'm gonna sit on this book, meaning not literally sit on the book, but I'm going to sit on the things. I'm going to think about what the author has said in the book. I'm going to think about her story a lot more to refine my thoughts and have refined my opinions on what she is saying. But here are some of my initial observations and initial thoughts and opinions. First of all, reading this book makes me feel very grateful. Makes me feel very grateful. Reading her story, as well as hearing her story in podcast format. It has shown me how is terrible the right word? I think it is the right word. It has shown me just how bad one's life could be. Now, bad is an interesting word because what does bad mean? Especially when you read her book, you realize that in her childhood, I'm not sure in her childhood when she was going through it. If she felt like her childhood was a bad childhood. So it's interesting using the word bad, because I don't know, I'm not convinced, just reading her book, if she thought her childhood was bad when she was going through it. She, for example, said that she never knew what it was like to eat and be full. So she just thought sometimes we're hungry, sometimes we're not. And that was just a light, normal fact of existence. And maybe I'm wrong, but my initial interpretation of me reading this book is that she, as a child, didn't think to herself, oh, this is terrible, woe is me. I don't think so. I don't think so. But when I say bad, I just mean having no food, no freedom of speech, no electricity. Being completely separated from the rest of the world, can't travel, can't leave, no information comes in. Malnutrition is everyone's basically malnourished. Like, and then it gets worse. That's just the start. Being sold into being a sex slave at the age of 13, mind you, seeing your own mother get raped in front of you and having no sex education, so you don't even know what's happening. Having to sell your own mother, she sold her own mother, that's another crazy story. Being kidnapped by a gang member, another, like an opposing gang member. Like, there's some stuff, and it just makes me very, I feel very grateful because I think that sounds awful to me. I would never want to go through some of those things at all. I wouldn't want to. I once said, I said in another podcast, maybe a few podcast episodes ago, I talked about how I personally think a lot about, I personally think a lot about the problems, how my life could get worse, and I think about that on a regular basis. I think about people in my family dying. I think about losing my money. I think about making bad decisions at work and then having less money. I think about my house catching fire. I think about, who knows, a terrorist attack coming to the country. I think about these kinds of things. Some of them are more extreme, some of them are less extreme. Some of them are just like, for some of them are really crazy, like a terrorism attack is really quite out there. And some of them are less crazy. For example, just thinking about my health and wanting to be healthy when I'm 60 and 70 and pondering my decisions now to make sure I'm making the right decisions. So there's a whole spectrum, a whole variety of different types of things that could go wrong, and I try to plan for whatever I can plan for. I've mentioned that before. And I think I do think there's a value in being grounded in the fact that everything you have now could go away. In like quickly, pretty quickly. In this North Korean book, this book by Yeonmi Park, it's interesting. It's fascinating to see that, if I remember correctly, in the 1960s and 70s, people generally in North Korea were well fed, they had food, there wasn't a famine. People generally had enough to have a basic life. A basic life. And then everything changed by the mid-90s when the famine struck. That's 30 years. We're all gonna live more than 30 years. That means during our lifetime that's possible, which is a terrifying thought. That people were fed, from what she said in the book. I'm not an expert on the history, so maybe I'm wrong, and I can respect that. But just based on my initial observations, it sounded like to me people were fed and may not have been the best life, quote unquote, but people had their basic needs met in the 60s and 70s. And then by the mid 90s, that all started to change quite rapidly. If I remember this correctly, I'm pretty sure that's how it was. 30 years is not a long time. Like, in 30 years, I'm going to be 59 or 58. I'm gonna have time left in my life, right? So that could happen. So it makes me feel really grateful that it hasn't happened. I think being grounded in that is, you can't think about that all the time because it'll depress you, but thinking about that sometimes as opposed to never is important, I believe. It also makes you realize, what else does it make me think of? Because it's actually a possibility that a lot of the good things you have now can go away and it's not permanent. It's important, how do I say this? It's important for me to do what I can, to do my small role, to make sure that I can maintain a lot of the positive things that I have that I'm happy about. So that means that I have to take, like, on a very simple basis, I have to eat good food, eat the right food. Because listen, hopefully, knock on wood, nothing crazy like what North Korea is like right now. Hopefully nothing like that happens in Canada. Hopefully not. And probably won't happen to that extent, I would think. But it doesn't take a North Korean type of situation for life to be turned completely upside down. Life can be turned upside down by your house catching fire. That alone can turn your life completely upside down. Break the floor beneath you, metaphorically speaking. Right? So, for example, like a negative health problem can cause that. So, it's important, I think, because I'm getting lost in my thoughts, but I suppose I'll do my best to put it in clear terms. But because everything can change in the blink of an eye, and there's a likelihood of that happening, I think it's important for me to do my part to make sure that I can do whatever I can do to make sure that my life goes in the best possible on the best possible path for myself and those around me. I think that's important. I should do what I can. Am I going to be perfect? Hell no. Will I mess it up? Absolutely. That's for sure. But I have to do the best that I can. And it sounds cliche, but doing the best you can, I don't think a lot of, how do I say this? I think doing the best you can, sometimes we think, oh yeah, I'm doing my best right now. At least that's what I think to myself. Like right now, the first thought that came to mind when I said, I have to do the best I can. Well, the first thought I have is, oh yeah, I'm doing the best I can. But if I were to look myself in the mirror, I think I can do more. I feel like I can do more. And I think all of us feel like we can do more. And I think it's important for us to strive for that, to strive to be that best version of ourselves. And we'll never really get there, but it's important to keep striving to be the best version and doing more than what we did today, doing more than what you did yesterday. And that doesn't mean doing more in terms of work, but just trying to be 1% better all the time. I had this religious conversation with someone recently about God. And she's a Christian, this one individual, and she was sharing what God meant to her. And while she was talking, I didn't say it out loud. Maybe I should have said it out loud, but I didn't. It occurred to me while she's talking. But maybe if God is something, if God is a being or something that's real, maybe God is some form of manifestation of the absolute best version of the collective self, the absolute best version of the collective self. We take the absolute best version of myself, the absolute best version of yourself, the absolute best version of everyone's self, and we create some sort of amalgamation of the absolute best version of everyone's self, and that basically becomes God. Now, because we can improve, theoretically speaking, infinitely, is that a word? Infinitively? No, infinitely. Infinitively sounds like some grammar point. The infinitive of a verb, infinitively, no. Theoretically, since we can improve infinitely, and that's a never-ending journey, at least to the best of my knowledge, God is always unreachable in a sense. Like, you're always striving to God, which I think a lot of religious people say that they try to understand God. They're always trying to understand him more and more, and you can never fully understand God, but you're trying to understand God more. And it's this something you're always trying to do. And that reminds me of all, to me anyway, I see some connection to all, I see some parallel there to always trying to better yourself, but never truly getting to the destination. But you're always trying to get to the destination, but you never get there. Maybe that's where God can be found, if there's such thing as a God. I don't know if there is. I'm not sure. I'm not a religious person by nature, but yeah, I'm not a religious person. I don't follow any organized religion, but but I do think that there's, yeah, that's a topic for another day, let's say. Anyway, wow. Let's wrap that up there. 35 minutes long. So I appreciate your attention, everyone. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your morning, day, night, whatever it is for you. And we'll talk soon. Bye for now.